hi, everyone, and welcome back to Malice in the Mitten. I'm your host, Tracy Preston, along with my bestie, Christine Mulligan. Hey, Christine.
Hey, Tracy. Hi, everybody. We ready to get another one kicked off today?
Sure are. We're back for more. Back for more. This is Season 1, Episode 8, Part 1, The Raines Brothers and Brent Eugene Koster. Recently, I was contacted by a listener regarding a hot topic flying around on Facebook here in Michigan. The person I was told about is Brent Eugene Koster, who was born and raised in Kalamazoo County. He is a convicted serial rapist and murderer who was released on parole in January of 2021. His parole will end in January of 2025. So what's all the hubbub with this guy on Facebook, you ask? Well, he started up a private transportation business. Yeah, sit with that thought for a minute. For some reason, the state of Michigan issued a convicted murderer a chauffeur's license in December of 2023. He was currently running his business, even had a business card with a picture of him on it, and it read, "Cash up front or wheels don't roll." I was like, wait, he's trying to do what? How is this even possible? You just can't make this stuff up.
So this is like a hot topic in Michigan right now still?
Right now. I think it's kind of calmed down a little bit, but a couple of weeks ago when I was traveling for work, that's when I got hit up by a listener who said, hey, I think you should check this out. And it was all over Facebook, which is cool. The community was like, no, sir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that I love that kind of crap when the village comes together to raise everybody up. I love that. But can we also just take a moment to say, yay, listeners!
Yay.
I love that we've been getting feedback on a lot of our episodes so far. I love that people are like going out of their way to get in touch with us. I just love this. So, yay, listeners.
Yes.
Keep it coming. Yeah. I love it.
Me too.
Okay.
Yeah. So to you, Mary Kate, I say thank you. Cheers, girl, because this whole thing is bananas. Listeners, this story has many, many layers. Not only will I tell you the story of Brent Koster, but I'm also pulling in Danny Raines, with whom he committed these rapes and murders. I will also be introducing you to Larry Raines, Danny's brother. Larry, just like Danny, was also a convicted serial killer.
That's bananas in and of itself. Do we know anything about their parents?
I'm going to tell you a little bit, and the little bit is all I could find. So, yeah, so that's coming.
That's immediately where my brain goes to, is WTF happened to these children as children.
Yep, because it's the whole nurture business going on in this family.
Yeah, isn't that a weird thing that we as humans, we always want to look for the reason why?
Well, so we can be better, do better, learn, change, grow, change the world.
Stop this kind of crap from happening in the future.
I really wish that we could.
That would be nice.
Yeah, it sure would.
All right, so what are we talking about here?
Here we go. Before I get going on the story, I'm going to give you all some nuggets on Kalamazoo, Michigan. You know how I like to do that kind of thing, right? So Kalamazoo is in the southwest region of the state of Michigan. So now I'm going to do that Michigan thing and tell you all where to find it on your hand. So I want you to look down at your left hand, palm down. Put your right index finger just above your ulnar bone, and that's on the left outer aspect of your hand. Now move it away from the edge of your hand toward the center just a smidge. And stop. That's where Kalamazoo is. Now you know, and you're welcome. Moving on.
Okay, can we just say that everybody not from Michigan doesn't really get that at all?
You get it if I show you, but see now
it's literally just Michiganians that are always like, let me show you the mitten, and I will show you where I am in the mitten.
We're the only state that can do it.
I'm a New Yorker from Long Beach, New York. Never have I ever once showed anybody the barrier island that sits off of the finger that comes off of New York. Never, not once.
Because you can't.
It's not a thing.
It doesn't
other
work.
Than outside of Michigan.
It only works in Michigan.
Not a thing.
It's all ours. Boo on you. All right.
Sorry, that's just funny to me. And I'm sure it's funny to the listeners that are not from Michigan. But all the listeners in Michigan right now are like, shut up, Christine.
Shut it up. All right, so we're moving on. Per Wikipedia, Kalamazoo was originally named the Village of Bronson after its founder, Titus Bronson from Connecticut. Titus was the first white settler when he built a cabin in the present-day city limits of Kalamazoo in 1829. Both the city and the township names were changed to Kalamazoo in 1836 and 1837. Abraham Lincoln gave a speech in Kalamazoo on August 27, 1856, during the campaign rally for John D. Fremont, the first Republican president candidate. The Stryker Corporation is based here, Christine. You're familiar with Stryker beds, aren't you?
Aren't we all?
Yeah, right? So these beds are so cool. They play music. You can sit your patient into a chair position. And the ones we were using, you could even talk to the patient in a ton of different languages, like commands and stuff, what we wanted them to do. It was really cool. Upjohn Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturing, which is now Pfizer in Kalamazoo, that's where we got a lot of those COVID vaccines from. Kalamazoo is the home of Western Michigan University and Bell's Brewery, and there are a handful of billionaires living here as well. Yep, you heard that right. Billionaires. Something I just surprised
me. I hear you, and I hear the Michigan pride oozing out of every pore in your body right now. But can I just tell you, as a non-Michiganian, that just the name Kalamazoo does it for me. I love it. I love the name Kalamazoo.
I know, like, it's cool.
I wish that I could say, where are you from? Kalamazoo. It just sounds, it just sounds funny.
What's all the hubba, what's all the hubba baloo in Kalamazoo? I'll tell ya.
It's like Timbuktu in Kalamazoo. You know, like those are the two places where you just want to tell people that you're from. Timbuktu and Kalamazoo. I love them. Yeah. I just love the names.
It's fun. It just rolls off the tongue.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. All right. Here we go. So now back to the Raines brothers. So Larry and Danny Raines were born and raised in Kalamazoo. They grew up under authoritarian rule from their father. Their dad also encouraged the boys as young teenagers to drink alcohol, as their father was slamming down the sauce himself. The brothers would get drunk frequently, and before long, they would be fighting one another over just about anything. Their father also abandoned the boys when they were in their young teens. He moved to Florida, where he was working at a gas station as an attendant, and he never looked back.
Okay, so abandonment and being feral children. We have that on the books.
Yep, that's where we're going. Okay. I was really, really wanting more information on what happened. But again, like we said, it wasn't there for me to find.
Yeah, well, drunk and feral, that's good enough.
That's plenty. That's all you need to know, right? So Larry Lee Raines, Danny's younger brother, was born on March 22nd, 1945. Not sure when he started going by the nickname Monk Steppenwolf, but at some point, that was his nickname. In 1958, at just 13 years old, Larry became friends with a 23-year-old woman by the name of Sue. She was a neighbor of Larry and Danny. She had three small children. Over the next couple of years, Larry ended up in an intimate relationship with Sue and was helping raise her children. I mean, come on. In a few years, Sue would have been 26 and Larry 16. That's a little bit of an issue. Here we go again, Christine. More pedophilia.
Oh, my God. I can't with the pedophilia.
I promise there wouldn't be any.
At least now it's a woman. So you're saying the woman was a pedophile.
Yeah, because she's dating a 16-year-old boy. She's like 26 after a few years.
I'm sorry. I meant to say pedophiliac, right? I said pedophilia. I can't even say that word. See, it does not roll off my tongue. So this chick, Sue, was a pedophile. She's messing around with a 16-year-old, and the 16-year-old is helping her raise her kids? Mm-hmm. Is that what you said?
That's what I said.
Oh, God, gross.
Yeah,
okay,
Sue's
so
got some
issues.
Is this
like backwoods Michigan or something?
Must have been. I mean, I don't know. It's not good. None of it's good. So in the early 1960s, and that's the thing, it was the 60s, I guess. Everything was fine. In the early 1960s, both Larry and Danny were dating a girl they went to high school with. Her name was Karen. Yeah, you heard that right. Double duty with Karen and the brothers.
Ew.
Mm-hmm. Now, Larry...
They weren't twins, were they?
No, they're a few years apart. A couple of years apart, the boys.
So this chick was a special kind of... Special kind of girl. Okay.
Karen was loosey-goosey is what she was. So now that Larry was still seeing Sue and Karen, you can only imagine how exhausting that was for him. Well, it's true. He was so busy with the ladies that he was failing at school, so he had enough of that and quit high school when he was in the 10th grade. Makes sense.
Total sense. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I say ironically.
Yep. In 1962, Larry was 17 years old when he and a friend decided it was a good idea to steal a car. It only took a hot minute before they were busted and arrested. But as luck would have it, he was made an offer he couldn't refuse. The district attorney's office threw out an offer that if Larry was to enlist in the army, they would dissolve his sentence for stealing the car. Well, that was a no-brainer. Larry promptly enlisted. But it wasn't long before he was causing a ruckus in the army. He was disciplined multiple times for misconduct and chronic alcoholism. In 1963, while completely bombed on alcohol, Larry attacked another military member, which ended up getting him kicked out of the army. This is when Larry returned to his old stomping grounds back home in Kalamazoo. It didn't take
long. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The messed up thing is he probably came back and they probably thought he was some kind of hero or something.
Right.
Nobody knew that he was causing a ruckus over there. They just thought that he got out.
Yeah, yeah. And thanks for your service, sir.
Ugh. Okay, go ahead. Okay,
all right. So it didn't take long before Larry and Sue were back in the swing of their old relationship. I think that Larry really loved Sue. He had asked her to marry him on more than one occasion, but every time he proposed, Sue wasn't having it. He was so heartbroken over Sue's rejection of his marriage proposals that he tried to kill himself by inhaling exhaust fumes while sitting in his 1958 Plymouth Plaza on December 23, 1963. I'm not certain why he didn't succeed, but in the end, he was admitted for 10 days at the Kalamazoo Regional Psychiatric Hospital. I'm thinking it may have been Sue that found Larry and intervened, but that's pure speculation on my part.
Okay, can I just take a second to say that it sounds like that would be a nice little reprieve just by the name of it. See how much I love this name, Kalamazoo? Mm-hmm. The Kalamazoo Regional Psychiatric Hospital. Sounds like a lovely place to visit.
Put that on the map.
That's my next vacation spot.
Yeah. They have great food. Okay. On May 30th, 1964, Larry was thumbing it when he was picked up by 30-year-old Gary Smock. Gary was a school teacher in Plymouth, Michigan. Not long into the ride, Larry pulled a gun on Gary, had him pulled over, get out of the car, and forced him into the trunk. Larry got back into the driver's seat, put the car in drive, and headed down the road. But soon, something caught his attention. It was Gary. He was attempting to get out of the trunk. He must have been making quite a bit of noise back there. Maybe he was able to pop the trunk somehow, or he was trying to jimmy it open or something. I know that cars nowadays have trunk release pulls, but I highly doubt those existed in the 1960s. I mean, cars didn't even have seat belts back then. Maybe the reason the trunk releases were put in the cars is because of all the people that were getting locked in them.
Right.
Larry quickly pulled off to the side of the road, ripped open the trunk, tied Gary up with something, I have no idea what, then shot him twice in the back of the head. Before closing the trunk and walking away, Larry decided he was going to take Gary's watch and shoes.
Ugh.
Mm-hmm. Well, loose lips sink ships, baby, and Larry was yakking away to people he knew about what he had done. It didn't take long before an arrest was made for the murder he committed on June 5th, 1964. Larry did admit freely that he killed Gary. While in custody, Larry admitted to killing four other people as he was robbing them at gas stations. Out of the four he admitted killing, he only knew the name of one of them, and that was Charles Snyder. He was from Indiana. He also admitted to killing someone from the Air Force in Paw Paw, Michigan, a man in Las Vegas, and another man in Kentucky. Police suspected that one of the unnamed men Larry killed was 21-year-old man by the name of Vernon LeBen. He was a serviceman from Southfield, Michigan. While LeBen was working at a gas station, he was shot and killed on April 6, 1964. Vernon was to be married the very next day. Oh my God, how awful. According to Larry, all of his murders began with robbery. Larry had planned on killing himself with the assistance of large amounts of alcohol, but he could never seem to get the courage to end his life. See, that right there makes zero sense to me and infuriates me. You can kill innocent human beings so easily, but you don't have what it takes to kill yourself?
Yeah, it's kind of like the catch-22 of cowards. Mm-hmm. That they don't have empathy in them, but at the same time, they don't really have any courage. Mm. It doesn't take courage to kill someone. It takes a lack of empathy. True. It takes courage to pull the trigger on yourself, though.
Very true.
They're just a real big coward is all it is.
So Larry was ordered by the court to undergo a psychiatric evaluation. After the evaluation was complete, it was legit. He was declared legally insane. Quote, the examining doctors concluded that the psychological trauma inflicted on him by his father had caused him to develop a subconscious hatred toward gas stations as they reminded him of his father. Okay, Christine, hit it.
Okay, well, what am I supposed to say about that? So why didn't he just go kill his father and leave these innocent poor people alone?
I know. Go down to Florida, find your dad.
Yeah.
Give him the what for.
And kill him for making you feral. Oh, God, I can't take it.
On October 8th, 1964, Larry was found guilty by a jury of his peers related to the murder of Gary Smock. He was sentenced to a life of imprisonment without the possibility of parole. He was charged with first-degree murder, not only for Gary, but for the potential other four victims he confessed to killing. Larry would spend the rest of his life at the Saginaw Correctional Facility in Tittabawassee Township, Freeland, Michigan. Larry died on November 12th, 2023 at the age of 78. So that is the end of Larry's story. And I find it fascinating that both, like we said in the beginning of the story, that both Larry and Danny ended up being serial killers. They weren't killing together. They were just serial killers on their own. I mean, he said he was raised authoritarian home. Well, so was I, and I'm not out there murdering people. I just talk about it. I wish I had more detail on what exactly was going on in that house with their dad, but there was nothing like we spoke about that I could find. So we are left to our own imagination on that. However, it must have been pretty brutal as Larry had a trigger that when hit, he just went nuts. And once I get to Danny, you'll see that he was the same.
I'm gonna agree with you. There's definitely got to be more to the story with Larry and Danny's daddy. Mm-hmm. Daddy did some bad things because neither one of these boys have an empathetic bone in their body. He definitely abused it out of them. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? And where was the mom? You don't hear anything about the mom at all?
Nothing. I found zero about their mother. Zero. So I don't know. So, were they just abandoned after the dad?
I jokingly said that they were left as feral teenagers, but they really were. They just lived in a house by themselves, probably in a rundown part of the neighborhood, just being feral children.
That's all we can speculate. I never once came across any mention of their mother.
Yeah, daddy did some bad deeds, definitely. Because you don't, granted, I'm sure they also have a little bit of inbreeding in this family. that they're not the smartest bulbs in the bunch, I'm assuming. But for both of them to have no empathy and complete callousness throughout their lives, I mean, but this guy, I mean, he lives till he's 78 years old.
Yeah.
So he's like literally a feral menace to society for 78 years.
Yeah.
That's bananas to me.
Sitting in prison all his life. Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. So what about Danny? What's going on with him?
Let's get on to Dan. Danny Arthur Raines, he was born on October 20th, 1943. So there you go. They were 2 years apart. Before Danny started his crime, he was married and things seemed to be going all right. But shortly after his brother Larry was incarcerated, Danny began fighting with his wife quite often. And it was kind of brutal. And his sexual cravings were starting to get out of control. On November of 1968, Danny was 25 years old. He attacked 18-year-old Dorothy King in Battle Creek in the parking lot of a pharmacy where she worked. Just like his brother Larry, he used a gun as a weapon. He forced Dorothy in his car and started heading out of town where he had every intention of raping her. Luckily, Dorothy had an opportunity to escape the car when Danny took a wrong turn near the Kellogg Community College. Dorothy identified Danny as her attacker to the police. He was arrested on February 4th, 1969, and was found guilty of felonious assault. Now, I looked that up because I'm a nurse, I'm in the medical field, I don't know all the legal jargon. So a felonious assault just means that a person threatens another person with a dangerous weapon. He was sentenced to 3 to 4 years in prison. While incarcerated, his wife divorced him. Atta girl. Danny ended up serving a total of 3 years and was out on parole on February 17th, 1972. He was 28 years old. When he returned home to Kalamazoo, he took a job at Sprinkle Gas Station, working the night shift, pumping gas, and watching over the garage. He would be the only one there overnight. He was living with a new girlfriend, and he would take her car back and forth to work. It is now that the paths of Brent and Danny would cross. And just like Christine likes to say, everything was about to get batshit crazy.
Batshit crazy. Oh, my Lord. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to end here because it's going to get deep, right? We're going to get deep into Danny Rain. So we're going to end here because we've been yapping for a while already. And I feel like we need to take a breather.
Yeah.
I really wish we knew more about what Daddy did, because it seems like both of these boys are just batshit crazy.
Yeah.
Both of them have had a pretty good run. Like, he got arrested. Danny gets arrested and serves a total of 3 years for the felonious assault.
Mm-hmm.
But we're just at the crust of him, right?
He's just getting started. Yep, that's right.
He does a lot more things.
He does a lot more things with Matt Koster.
Because this is back in 72. And then we're talking all the way up until he goes to jail and then gets out. And when did you say? 20? 23? When did he get out of jail?
How old was he when he got out of jail?
No, what year?
Oh, 19.
This was like a hot topic just recently.
Oh, Brett Koster, not Danny. So Brett Koster, he's the guy who got out in 21. He got paroled.
Oh, okay.
But all this business, what we're going to get into in the next couple episodes, so to answer your question, it's going to get rough. It's going to be very sensitive. It's going to be very triggering. So for anyone that wants to move forward with the rest of this story, I will warn you, it's very triggering. We have some serious detail on the rape and murders that Danny and Brent did together. It's going to be brutal. So I'm just giving you guys a heads up now. There will also be a trigger warning at the beginning of the next episode of Danny and Brent.
Okay.
All right.
All right. So let's wrap it up here before we get into the juicy nitty gritty of the deranged and tell everybody to come back and see us on next Malice Monday so we can get into the grit.
Yeah, we're going to get gritty. So thanks, everyone. Please keep coming back. We love hearing from you. And again, this story came from a listener. She kind of pulled my attention to it because I was traveling for work. So again, Mary Kate, this one's for you. Have a great week, everyone.
Have a great week. Bye, guys.
Bye.